This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. The show is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about the firm and the services we provide to our clients, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where you can find videos, audios, and articles of interest, including recent blog posts on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics. So, blueprintforwealth.org. Now, today, as we toggle back and forth between business, tax, and estate planning issues, we're going to talk a little bit about some very important estate planning issues. One that I know you've addressed in your estate planning, but if you haven't, you need to, and you need to do so now. And by the way, if you have adult children over the age of 18, it's a good idea to bring your kids to your estate planner to make sure that they have, and you have, living wills, advanced medical directives, and healthcare powers of attorney, as well as privacy releases that we provide to our clients. Living wills and certain advanced directives describe what you want to have happen regarding treatment if you're faced with a serious accident or illness. These legal documents actually speak for you when you're not able to speak for yourself. So, for example, if you're in an automobile accident and you have a living will or you have an advanced medical directive, it will express your wishes in terms of your healthcare desires. Living wills and other advanced directives are not just for elderly adults. Unexpected end-of-life situations happen at any age, at the age of 18, at the age of 25, at the age of 30. It's important for all adults to have these medical directives. An advanced medical directive, as it's known in Virginia, or a healthcare power of attorney, as it's known in Maryland and D.C., are written instructions regarding your medical care preferences and what you want to have happen in the event that you have to have special medical needs. Your family and your doctors will consult these advanced directives and healthcare powers of attorney if you're not able to make your own healthcare decisions. For example, you're in a coma or you're under anesthesia in surgery. Having written instructions will help reduce confusion or disagreement among your family members and physicians. The advanced directives typically include the following. Number one, a living will. This is a written legal document that spells out the types of medical treatment and life-prolonging or life-sustaining procedures or measures that you want or don't want, such as mechanical breathing, being hooked up to a respirator or a ventilator, tube feeding or resuscitation. So if you have a DNR, that means you do not want to be resuscitated. In some states, living wills may be called healthcare directives or advanced medical directives. In Florida, you have to have a separate living will apart from your healthcare proxy or your healthcare power of attorney. In Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., you can combine them into a single document. Often, we'll draft them as separate documents for our clients because we understand that many of you are moving around the country. A medical or healthcare power of attorney is a legal document that designates an agent or a healthcare proxy to make medical decisions for you in the event you're unable to do so yourself. But it's different from a power of attorney authorizing someone to make financial transactions for you. This deals with healthcare and healthcare only. A DNR, a do not resuscitate order, may be incorporated into an advance medical directive. It's a request, or a living will by that, for that matter, it's a request to not have cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, if your heart stops or if you stop breathing. Advance directives do not have to include a DNR order. And you don't have to have an advance directive to have a DNR order. You could just have a separate DNR order apart from all of your other documents. Your doctor can put a DNR order into your medical chart if you so desire. Do you need a living will and a medical power of attorney? Well, living wills don't cover every possible situation. Typically, they cover the situation where you're terminally ill and death is imminent, or you're in an end-stage condition such as stage 4C in cancer, and death is imminent, or you're in a persistent vegetative state. So you will want a medical power of attorney to designate somebody to be your healthcare proxy or agent. This person is going to be guided by your living will, but has the authority to interpret your wishes in situations that may not be described in the living will, such as whether or not you want certain types of care administered if you're admitted to a hospital. A medical power of attorney also is a good idea if your family is opposed to some of your wishes or is divided over what your wishes may be. Choosing a healthcare agent is probably the most important part of your estate planning. You need to trust that this person has your back, has your interests at heart, that this person who is your agent understands your wishes and will act in accordance with your wishes. He or she also needs to be a mature and level-headed individual, so it's often not a great choice to name young adults, kids over the age of 18, unless they truly exhibit maturity and truly are level-headed, are not emotional, and can exercise level-headedness when it comes to whatever your wishes are. They have to be comfortable with very candid and very uncomfortable topics. Don't pick somebody because you have feelings of guilt or you feel an obligation to pick them because they're your child, for example, or your spouse even. Your healthcare agent doesn't have to be a family member. You may want to have healthcare decisions being made by somebody other than the person that you choose to handle your financial matters, and more importantly, it may not be a family member. It may be helpful, but it's not necessary, particularly if the person lives locally in the same city or state as you do. But the doctor has a telephone, and the doctor can call anyone or communicate via the internet with anyone to make sure that your needs are being taken care of. Now, the healthcare power of attorney addresses what kinds of needs you really have and what treatments you want in certain circumstances. So when you're figuring out what your healthcare power of attorney should have, think about your values, such as the importance to you of being independent and self-sufficient. What would you feel that would make your life not worth living? Under what circumstances would you want to have life-prolonging procedures withheld? Would you want a treatment to extend your life in any situation, regardless of what your quality of life is? Would you want treatment only if a cure is possible? Do you want to anticipate potential future cures? Would you want palliative care, in other words, care to ease pain and discomfort, even if you're terminally ill? And in most cases, people want that type of care. Although you can't predict what medical situations will affect you or will arise in the future, be sure to always address the following treatments in your healthcare powers of attorney and living wills. Resuscitation. This restarts the heart when it has stopped beating, cardiac death, in other words. Determine if and when you want to be resuscitated by CPR or by a device that delivers an electric shock to stimulate your heart. Medical ventilation. This takes over your breathing if you're unable to do so. Consider mechanical ventilation if, when, and for how long you would want to be placed on a medical or mechanical ventilator. Nutrition and hydration. This supplies the body with nutrients and fluids intravenously or by tube that is directed into your stomach. Decide if, when, and for how long you want to be fed in this manner, because you can keep yourself alive even if you're brain dead for a long period of time. Dialysis. This removes waste from your blood and manages fluid levels if your kidneys no longer function properly. Determine if and when and for how long you want to receive dialysis. These are considered, all of these are considered, life-prolonging procedures, and you need to consider them in doing your estate planning. Other things that the Living Will and Advanced Medical Directives address are organ donation. You can specify in your advanced directive any wishes you have about donating your organs. Now, many of us have the ability to do so on our driver's license, but that is for transplantation only. In your advanced medical directive, you can actually say that you want to donate your organs, which include eyes and tissues, for transplantation, or you can even donate your body for scientific study, such as to a medical school. If you wish to donate your body, you need to contact the medical school closest to your home for more details. Injury, illness, and death are not easy subjects to talk about, but by planning ahead, you can ensure that you receive the type of medical care that you want. You also relieve your family of the burden of trying to guess what you'd want done in the event of a serious accident. If you've got questions regarding your estate planning, particularly your health care planning, advanced medical directives, powers of attorney, health care privacy issues, call us at Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, and you can schedule an appointment with one of the many estate planning attorneys we have at the firm by calling 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in a moment.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
Did you know that S-Corps have a unique hybrid status capable of producing savings not available to other business entities? Income generated through an S-Corp and reported on a shareholder's return can be classified either as wages or as profit distributions based on a variety of factors. The outcome of that determination matters a lot because amounts treated as wages are subject to payroll taxes while profit distributions are not. Depending on the amount involved, the difference in taxes can be substantial. For example, on profits of $250,000, taking the full amount as salary results in combined payroll taxes of roughly $20,000, but taking it as a profit distribution results in zero payroll taxes. If you'd like to know more about the distinctions between S-Corps and other types of entities, give us a call at 703-218-2100.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him at 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Al Behar. Welcome, Al.
Thank you, Wayne.
Welcome to the show. Al is Vice President and Senior Private Client Fiduciary Advisor, that's a mouthful, at Wilmington Trust. And, you know, I've known Al for many years, but Wilmington Trust is a relatively new gig for you, right?
Moved over about almost 2 years ago now, although the firm actually has been around for quite a while. Wilmington Trust as a company started, I guess, about 100 years ago and really started out as the family office for the DuPont family.
Is that right? I didn't realize that. Yeah.
It's sort of interesting. And it's kind of grown out of that, and it's really grown into, over the past 100 years or so, one of the country's premier wealth management type firms. So we've now got offices and up and down the East Coast and all the places you'd expect: Boston, New York, Philly, Wilmington, of course, Baltimore, D.C., Atlanta, several offices in Florida, and now in California as well.
Oh boy, you've made the trek across the country.
So
what does the firm do? What do you do exactly?
Well, it's a relative to some of our competitors in the wealth management space. It's relatively small, but has a great range of sophisticated services. I'd say the four core pieces of what we do revolve around obviously managing money. So investment management is one core service, but you really can't do that without providing some fairly sophisticated financial planning type services by way of cash flow planning, mm-hmm. estate planning, the tax analysis, and the like. A whole range of fiduciary services. So we'll serve as trustee on pretty much any sort of trust that might be out there. And then, for lack of a better word, one of the other things that we're very big on is something called family governance, and that really revolves around educating families about what has been set up, how it works, and how to keep it working over the generations.
You know, that's a valuable service. I think more and more of my clients are focusing on that. In the past, I'd say, 20, 25 years ago, it wasn't that big of a deal, or at least people were not focusing on it. Today, particularly in high net worth families, it is a very, very high area of focus. What do you teach them? I mean, what types of things do you bring to the table in terms of establishing a family governance structure, if you will?
Well, it's, what most families don't realize is that wealth doesn't get dissipated from poor planning or poor investments. I mean, that happens every once in a while.
Right.
But far more common is starting in generation 2, 3, and 4, you get more and more people that are now part of this wealth, and what flows out of that naturally are differences of opinion, for lack of a better word, disagreements, and that really is what ends up sinking wealth. And there's this thing called, this phenomenon called shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves, where from generation 1 to generation 4, the wealth is created, built up, and then sort of dissipated,
right.
And generally involves around governance issues. And so we believe in doing a lot of family education, and also making sure that what we call conflict-free structures are set up for the family to enable that wealth to continue.
How are you structured to serve your clients today?
We're team-based, so it's not one person, but we've got five people on our team here in D.C., as well as a whole group of assistants. But we're really set up so that each discipline is represented. So we have two financial planners on our team. One does basic cash flow analysis and things like that. And then we have another high-level planner who does a lot of business succession and high-end estate planning. There is a fiduciary on the fiduciary person, so we do a lot of trust management and trust administration and advice.
Right.
There is a portfolio manager for investment purposes, and then there is a private banker on the team for banking services and really how to effectively use credit as part of the financial plan.
And one of the things we didn't mention is the relationship of Wilmington Trust to M&T. So does that facilitate
Yes.
the banking relationship more than ever before?
It does. Actually, it's been great. M&T bought Wilmington Trust about maybe 2.5 years ago, and it's really been a great fit for a couple of reasons. One, it gives us access to the whole suite of services that they provide on the banking side, but they also have a whole range of really, really terrific business clients, business owners, and that has been a great fit for us as well.
Okay, what are some of the big challenges that you're facing in business today?
There's probably two main challenges to what we do and for clients. One is we're in a volatile investment environment. We've been like that probably since the late 90s. We've been through several crashes, the most recent of which in 2008 has
right.
certainly been the worst in our lifetime. And you add to that a changeable tax environment that, Congress now tells us is sort of permanent, but somebody said it's permanent until it's not. Permanent.
That's until the tax reform debate begins
right.
in August.
So we kind of have to deal with all of that. It's a permanent part of our environment. It's not going to go away.
So change is permanent. That's the one thing that is permanent.
Change is permanent, and that's what really worries clients.
You know,
clients are very concerned with volatility in the investment world, volatility in the tax world. The two biggest questions we get from the clients are, how much is enough? They're trying to quantify that, and that's a moving target, and it's,
sure.
and it's as much art as it is science, and it's also helping them avoid the impact of another crash like we saw in 2008. And that's really, those are the two biggest things by far that we see on a regular basis.
Yeah, I run into it in my practice as well. The how much is enough piece of it is a really scary one, because we just don't know what is going to happen in the future vis-a-vis inflation. So if inflation hits, interest rates go up, things change, are going to change in terms of your modeling, I would imagine.
Well, we revisit our projections at least twice a year. So when we sit down initially with a family to go through a lot of that information, we want to make sure that our assumptions are correct, and it's something that we need to look at over and over and over again, particularly in a volatile environment.
One of the things that you mentioned was that, you know, people are worried about if they're going to have enough at the end, but then they're also worried about the volatility of their investments. How do you all effectively manage investment risk?
You need to do that at all phases of the relationship, so it's particularly important up front to look at things like time horizon, get a handle on risk tolerance, and sometimes that's a little bit trickier than it sounds.
Why? Why is it trickier? What
well,
makes
because,
it trickier?
Because people will say that they are willing to take risk, but then sometimes it turns out that they really aren't, but they want high returns regardless of that.
Right.
Regardless of that. So you really have to quantify that. And for the average, you know, we as investment managers, we look at something called standard deviation. For the average client, their definition of risk is how much money can I lose in this thing? And that's
a great way of quantifying
really
it or articulating it.
So, but the other side of the coin is you have to look at spending patterns and spending needs and make sure that the two are married up, and you run projections and you run worst case scenarios, make sure that there's no gap between their goals and ultimately what they can spend and what they want to have for themselves and the succeeding generations. You have a written investment policy statement that's put in place. So there's a roadmap for everything that you do. And then it's just like real estate, where people say, you know, what are the three most important things? Location, location, location.
Mm-hmm.
With investments, it's diversify, diversify, diversify.
Still, that's still the mantra.
Yes, it is. And that will never change. And it's more than just having, you know, 20 stocks in the S&P and a few bonds as diversification. It's looking at multiple asset classes, involving multiple styles, involving multiple managers. So not everything is correlated to go up and down together.
How do you, I imagine that you're having to meet with these clients periodically, sometimes four times a year, maybe two times a year, maybe others one time a year. It depends on what they're up to. How do you factor in the changes in the economy, factor in the changes in the investment world in terms of doing their financial planning? That sounds to be very, very difficult to do.
You have to constantly check that your basic assumptions are right, you know, recheck the numbers, and then rerun things at least a couple of times a year to say, are we still on track? Can we still do this? Can we live like this? And give people some comfort and be able to quantify that to some degree, to say, yes, we can maintain lifestyle. And every once in a while, there are some gaps where folks have a lifestyle they want to maintain, but the asset base may or may not be there, and it's our job to tell them that as
well.
Have
you ever had a client, and I've had this happen, you know, not because I don't do financial advisory work, but I've seen it happen, a client come in and say, you know, this is how I want to invest my portfolio, and then all of a sudden they start spending it a lot faster than you had planned with them, and they are in trouble. Have you ever seen that happen, where the client actually spends more than they have?
It does happen, you know, and frankly, the more common scenario is the opposite one, where their savings has been so ingrained in their psyche for so many years, they have trouble loosening the purse strings. But sometimes it is the opposite issue, and that's why it's important to revisit those assumptions on a frequent basis.
Now, the Tax Reform Act was enacted effectively on January the 1st, signed by the president on January the 3rd. There were a lot of changes made. It certainly didn't simplify the Internal Revenue Code, and that's why I say I think we're going to see tax reform revisited later this year or next year. How has it affected your planning for your clients?
Well, you know, the Tax Act did have a lot of changes, but it was also very notable for what it didn't change. And one of the things we were expecting was a change in the exemption against federal estate taxes.
That was a shocker.
It was unbelievable. And so the rate jumped up to, from 35 to 40%, but they left the gift and estate tax schedules together, and a lot of the other planning tools were left intact. So the fact of the matter is that 97% of the families out there don't have to worry about federal estate taxes right now and probably never will. But what we are counseling clients on is to make sure that the basic blocking and tackling is in place. Make sure that the wills, the revocable trusts accurately reflect goals. Make sure that powers of attorney, healthcare powers, and living wills are all been updated and accurately reflect what folks want to do. If they have irrevocable trusts that have been put in place in the past, let's take a look at those, make sure they still meet needs, because sometimes those trust structures can be merged into other trusts.
That's right.
Or even terminated if they're no longer needed. And then finally, we also want to look very closely at the other things that people set up, like family limited partnerships, LLCs, and the like. And we're going to revisit the non-tax reasons those structures were set up, because more often than not, there were tax reasons for them being set up. So, but that does not mean they should now be dismantled, because there were lots of reasons why they should, particularly with regard to protecting assets for future generations. You know, one thing I say is, you know, we have a marital deduction, we have an exemption against federal estate taxes. There's no exemption against divorce.
That's right.
And so you
or
need
creditors.
To protect or creditors.
I mean, these vehicles, irrevocable trusts, family limited partnerships, and LLCs are truly valuable asset protection devices. And if they're operated properly and in accordance with the formalities that the law requires, can be very effective protections against creditor attacks for your beneficiaries, for your family, as well as for yourself going forward. So we are still doing estate planning. Oh, and by the way, the fact that the exemptions are now $5.25 million for gift and estate and generation skipping transfer tax means that there still is a lot of planning available too, right? We're able to use valuation discounting. We're able to set up a little bit more aggressive structures that are available for people who are of high net worth.
All of those things, as you point out, Wayne, are still in place. And for wealthier families, frankly, there's been no change in the importance and the value of the planning that they need to do.
Now, the last question I had for you today, Al, was what questions should somebody ask if they're interviewing an advisor or a wealth manager today?
We have a number of questions that we like people to ask, and if they don't ask them, we'll tell them. So, you know, first and foremost is the wealth manager you're speaking with a fiduciary?
Mm-hmm.
And what that means, plain and simple, is are they sitting on the same side of the table as you when it comes to giving advice and working with your family? And that's a very high standard to achieve. Second, and related to that, is how is the firm and the advisor compensated? You should know, is it fee-based compensation? Is it commission-based? And I'm not suggesting that commission-based compensation is always not good or better or worse, but just be aware of how your advisor is being compensated. You want to know, what does a typical client for that advisor look like? Where do you fit in? You know, are you a small fish in a big pond, a big fish in a small pond? How much attention are you going to get? How is the advisor's team structured, if there is one? So if it's one person that you're dealing with, you should know that. If it's a team, how is that person integrated with the rest of the team? What are the credentials of the team? You know, what sort of checks and balances are in place, and are there other services available?
These are great, great questions. We're talking with Al Behar, Vice President, Senior Client, Private Client Fiduciary Advisor at Wilmington Trust. Al, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Phone number 202-434-7013, and email address is abehar@wilmingtontrust.com.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. with your Blueprint for Wealth right here on 1500 a.m.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.